Now broadcasting the Dr. Nilda Business Foresight Show, positioning your business with strategies for an extraordinary future. Dr. Nilda features expert guests from diverse backgrounds to bring you their stories and strategies that have helped them reach their success. The diversity in industries gives you that panoramic view from an array of industries. They are innovators, thought leaders, trendsetters, and strategists. Here, Dr. Nilda reveals strategies that will position you to be on the cutting edge and be able to do what you love with the people you like, making the profits you want to live the lifestyle that you have dreamed of. And now, here's your host, Dr. Nilda Perez.
Hello, and welcome back to the Dr. Nilda Business Foresight Strategy Show. And with me today, I have my co-host, Rachel Calderon, and a very special guest from all the way from the UK, Steve Wells. How are you guys?
Yeah, I'm great, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well. So let me read you his bio. He has a very interesting bio. Steve Wells is a global futurist, a keynote speaker, and the COO of Fast Futures. He advises global corporations in the transformative potential of disruptive technologies and how brands can leverage them to creative, distinctive identities in this fast-changing world where there's in a fast-changing world and drive potential growth and improvement. His particular focus is on new models of leadership, collaboration, innovation that's required to sustain and differentiate brands in this rapidly changing reality. Steve is a co-editor and a contributor to the books Future of Business, which I have, Business Genuine Stupidity, which I don't have, Ensuring AI, and what do I? Ensuring AI Serves Humanity, The Future Reinvented, Reimagining Life, Society and Business, and his forthcoming book, Unleash the Human Potential and the Future of AI in Business. This is fascinating. I thank you so much for being here with us today.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Thank you for being here.
So I want to start with, tell me a little bit about what Fast Futures is about. What is this company? What do you do? What is it about?
Well, in terms of what it's about, what's really important to us is two things, really. One is helping to grow awareness about future studies, about looking into the future, not just doing the usual thing that corporations do and kind of use trends to work out where we might be in 2 years' time, but really take a step back and look at the disruptive nature of technologies and other factors in the environment that may change the destination of our businesses, of our lives, of whatever we're choosing to do in the future. But what's really important to us as well is trying to do this in a way that helps people realize that as a society, we have a choice. That choice is whether we want to use the opportunities that technologies give us to create a very human future, or do we want to leave our fate to the tech companies? So that's really what we're about. We're about the future, and we're about hopefully creating a sense of importance around taking that opportunity to create a very human future.
Fantastic.
Okay. Fantastic. So what is the story behind Fast Futures, the book. And the book is called The Futures of Business.
The Future of Business. This one.
Yes, that's what I have, right.
Well, I mean, I've known Rohit, my co-director, for about 15 or 20 years. And about 3 years ago, we were having a chat, and he said, look, I've got an idea for a book. I want to bring 25, 30 people together for them to share their special, their unique, their expert perspectives on the future. And we spoke to some publishers, and we said, you know, if we were to produce a book, how long would this take? And they said, 18 months to 2 years. And we thought there must be a way to break that publisher's paradigm, to be disruptive in the publisher's space. So we brought that book to market in 19 weeks. With 60 and not 25 or 30 chapters. So we have 60 contributors, 60 chapters from pretty much every single continent around the world. And, you know, we bought this book with a view to, as I've said before, really helping people understand what are the kind of technologies we're seeing, and importantly, what are the potential implications for business, for society more generally. Because unless we understand those, then we can't formulate of the sensible breadth and the sensible flexibility in strategies that we need to take advantage of those.
Amazing. I love it. Okay. So in your book, I know you talk a lot about businesses and the future and technology. So what are the major themes that you see changing in this rapidly changing world, which has changed? And that's the thing. Although change has been, all of our lives, but we find that with the information age, it's much faster. The future is tomorrow. The future is next week.
Oh, the future is now. I think the thing that particularly interests me is, first of all, we were talking just now about the significance of artificial intelligence. And without a doubt, artificial intelligence is one of the big game-changing technologies that we're already seeing and that we're going to see. But what actually sits behind that, I think, is almost a change of mindset that we're seeing. In part, it's generationally driven. So at the moment, maybe most of us are part of an analog world. We're used to making things, products. We're used to developing services. We kind of understand that the solutions that we have available to us may include technology. But we're kind of used to a reasonably modest-paced stepwise change. Now that world, that analog world, is clashing with a digital world. And people in the digital world kind of understand that technology is the solution. You know, data is actually the thing that lubricates everything. It's the new oil, if you like. Data is the value. It's not the product. It's not the service. It's the data that wraps around that. And the people that have grown up in the digitized world have grown up in a world of social media, of connectivity. You know, they expect things. They know things that, these things should be available to them now. And I think this creates a very, very different mindset. And the challenge is, how do we then factor that into the way that we run our businesses and even to the way that we run our lives?
Right.
Because maybe the big challenge is actually, if we're running a business that's been successful in the past, why do we need to change and how do we change? Because actually, I think there's a question of our underlying organizational DNA. Right. Are we capable of creating a new game? Because if we're not, then we're likely to get left behind. And we see that, I often use four examples. Two examples of what happens when you ignore it, Kodak and Blockbuster. Kodak discovered the digital camera and said, no, this is going to cannibalize our business. They also totally ignored the possibility of a competitor coming in and stealing their market. Blockbuster actually had a partnership offer on the table from Netflix. They turned them down.
Uh-huh.
Blockbuster don't exist. Netflix, last time I looked, worth about $60
billion. That's right.
Now, if we then look at the way that companies can come in and be really disruptive to certain markets, then we need look no further than Airbnb and Uber. And Uber have had their critics, but fundamentally what they've done is they've come in, used existing technologies really, looked at what the consumer wants, what the customer wants, and put that together with a really focused offering. And that's been revolutionary. So, you know, could other companies, could a Hilton group do an Airbnb? Could the biggest cab company in the world do an Uber? Probably not, because they're so invested in what's got them the success this far. And that's a really big leadership challenge, I think.
Okay. We were talking earlier, and what do you think companies should be looking to do? What skills do you think that they should be looking to, because a lot of companies get stuck on like one area. Should they be looking to transition into AI? How do you think a company should be positioning themselves for the future of their business?
Yeah. Well, I would say this, wouldn't I? But I think futures is one of those areas, one of those skills that organizations need. I don't necessarily mean that everyone in the organization needs to be a futurist, but right. I think there are some fundamental skills about foresight, about sense making, about scenario thinking, where people can actually take a slightly different view of what they're seeing emerging in the future. So rather than taking the traditional planning approach, which is looking at the trends and building what we've got, actually taking a step back and looking at the possibilities in the future and building back to now.
Right. And looking at one of the things I talk a lot about is looking at what they currently have. looking at everything with the what if, you know what, this works great, but what if we add it, you know, and always having that, you know, we don't always have to invent, you know, they talk about reinventing the wheel. We don't always have to reinvent that wheel, but if we can do more with that wheel, we can do a better wheel, then that's futuring. That's looking at it in that perspective. So, and that's definitely leading the way. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. It's a really great example, actually, at the moment, isn't it? NASA have just come up with a new wheel, which will be more effective for rovers on Mars. But actually, maybe that wheel design would actually also be useful on different terrains here on Earth as well. So, you know, you take a fundamentally, you know, simple design, you look at a new way of creating a new piece of kit for a very specific task, and look where you can roll it out, no pun intended, in other situations as well. So, I agree with you, you know, that maybe there are some solutions around that we already see. But I think this goes back to how do we lead and how do we work within our organizations when we start to think about the future and the disruptive nature? Because I think if we're a successful organization now, and I think we all probably see it all the time with the people we talk to in client organizations or wherever. What's the real motivation for me to throw away everything that I'm used to throw away everything I'm comfortable with, to get rid of the stuff that's given me the success I've enjoyed now and move into this world of uncertainty and complexity? Because that's what we're doing. And that's one of the other things that I think as organizations we need to think about. So if we think about artificial intelligence and we look at the plethora of opportunities that represents, potentially to even change the notion of what we mean by a work colleague, because maybe that work colleague becomes an enhanced human. Maybe that work colleague is an artificially intelligent robot. How can we take the same work business paradigms we have now into that new situation?
I think this is where,
for me, the issue of leadership is so important. I don't see some of these future challenges and these future disruptions as technological in nature. I really think they're societal in nature. And it's how we respond to those challenges and opportunities as human beings that actually makes the difference at the end of the day, not how sophisticated a piece of AI is.
Okay. I was listening to an interview the other day with Renee McGormy, and she was from, I'm sure you've heard of her, Blue Ocean Strategy. And she was talking about not necessarily being disruptive. She says not every business is really formulated and not every industry can be disruptive, but you can still stand out and be different within that company. And I think that's where leadership skills come in, having leadership skills for the future. Would you agree?
I would. And maybe we're starting to touch on there one of the opportunities that people still have going into a more and more digitized future. So one of the things that I think we're going to be seeing as artificial intelligence plays a much bigger part in our lives and our businesses is a certain number of kind of more human type issues within our business. So how do we develop relationships with new business partners, given that we expect all these new technologies to create new industries, to create new businesses? How do we start to articulate new business propositions within the context of a digitized economy? So I do think that human relationships are actually the piece that we can almost lift out from where we are now and preserve, because they'll be critically important as all of the routine stuff that we currently see and more into the future is automated away. And that brings us, you know, kind of round to the point of view that we often see nowadays, which is what's the future for the workforce? What is the future for jobs in a highly mechanized and automated society?
Right.
And once you start to think about that, you then start to question fundamentally what kind of society we want. Do we want a universal basic income because 50% of the people may not be employable because we have so much automation? If we have universal basic income, how's that funded? If we're funding that from the public sector, what's the tax regime we need to create the revenues in order to fund that? How do we differentiate between businesses that employ people and businesses that are distributed autonomous organizations because they only exist in software on the blockchain? You know, how do we tax those compared to the other? So these issues are just so massive for humanity and for society generally. And that goes back to, you know, my point that this isn't a technological issue. It's a societal issue. And it's an issue about how we choose to address some of the challenges and opportunities that the technology represents.
Okay. Can you give me one example of a company that has embraced this and has succeeded?
I mean, the two obvious examples are Airbnb and Uber. You would argue that Uber are perhaps the company that has fallen down a little bit on the way that it treats human element of its business. I mean, certainly there are lots of cases in the UK where Uber has taken some criticism about the way that it treats its drivers, as an example, and the way that it tries to almost bully it through the regulatory regime. So there were obviously some issues there. I think it's really hard to actually find very good organizations that demonstrate both adoption of technology, but also a really true representation of what they want to see humanity and society look like. I mean, I think one of the companies that maybe do that fairly well are Google. But you know, they're reasonably few and far between, and you would hope that Google got it, wouldn't you? Otherwise, we're all in trouble with what they do with our data.
that's true.
But this is what really fascinates me, because it seems to me that we're almost on this cliff edge. And you know, what we have is we can choose to, when I say, I'm going to mix up the metaphors here, but you know, if we turn back from the cliff edge, then you know, it's kind of safe over there. But if we go over the edge and everything is destroyed, so we probably need to work out what is it we're doing on the top of the cliff edge. What kind of fence can we put before we actually fall over the top that ensures that we retain our safety, then we become more comfortable with what we're seeing. And I go back again to this notion of leadership, and we need to help people become more comfortable with uncertainty and complexity. And right. If we take that notion of change that you mentioned early on, you know, we're really used to saying that change is a constant, aren't we? We're not used to saying that change is almost out of our control, which it kind of is at the moment.
It is.
The other thing we know about change is that actually we don't resist change, we resist being changed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So if we can help people to understand the opportunities and the choices that they have, then maybe some of this change feels slightly less daunting than it might otherwise be.
Absolutely. Can I ask you this? What are some examples that you can give our audience as far as to help as leaders, help them change in this, you know, technological environment that we're kind of headed into here?
Well, I think one of the things is to actually look at it, is to actually go find it, go research it, go and understand what it's capable of. Try and get underneath the skin of the technology and separate the myth from the fact. We are seeing some absolutely amazing things being done by artificial intelligence and some of these other technologies as well. You know, it's just extraordinary what they can do, right. But they can be enhanced for good. Now, what I find quite interesting is particularly media does like to jump on kind of sensationalizing some aspects of this. And I've kind of been a party to that, I suppose, in the UK. When the BBC ring me up and say, can you talk about the impact of artificial intelligence and autonomous vehicles on the workforce? And I go, yeah, of course I can. But it's quite difficult to actually get into that very short period of time that you have, not only to articulate what the issues are around that, what the opportunities are in terms of business efficiency, but also what the societal implications are and what the advantages could be if we choose to take some of these other choices about embracing this change and really trying to bring people with us.
Right. Okay. Makes sense. Okay. So, of course, we're talking about the future. What are the challenges that can be characterized that you actually see in the future? What would some of those be?
What would some of the challenges be?
Yes.
I mean, I think Theresa May recently gave quite an interesting speech at Davos. In part, it was the UK is open for business subtext because we're leaving the European Union. But some of the things that she said was, we need to be very good in the UK at taking the opportunities, the economic opportunities, that these new technologies represent for us. In order to do that, there are some societal changes that we need to make that would help support that, like education, like creating a technology-friendly business environment. The other things that she spoke about were, we need to be careful about the ethics that we allow the social media platforms, for example, to run with. We need to be clear that they have a responsibility, not only around safety and protection of children, but also national security as it might relate to terrorism. So there's a kind of an ethical responsibility on the tech companies there. But there's also an ethical responsibility in the way that we behave with technologies as individuals. So the way maybe that we behave when we're on social media. So I think some of these things kind of playing into that agenda as well. So we're starting to see countries with economic self-interest playing into the opportunities that technology represents. But I don't see that it's fundamentally possible for one country to actually make that happen. So at the very same time, we've got increasing nationalism, the potential for isolationism, and you know, the for whatever you think about it, some of the Trump policy decisions, the referendum in the UK to leave the European Union are kind of examples of that. At the very same time, those nationalistic feelings are coming to the fore. Then actually what we really need is increasing globalization, particularly around how we deal with the ethical questions that some of these technologies represent. And maybe what we need is some sort of global ethics treaty. And I'm pinching that idea from the author Gerd Leonard, who's written a really good book called Technology versus Humanity. And he proposes that we need a digital ethics treaty because potentially, and as Professor Stephen Hawking says as well, AI is so potentially damaging to humanity that we need to make sure we understand how to control it, because it could be as deadly as nuclear weapons. And we have treated guard against that.
Yes, definitely. Yes, it has a lot of potential. There's a lot of positive, but there is also a danger, and it can be extremely dangerous. So,
yeah. And there's some interesting parallels, aren't there? Because nuclear power can be really good or it can be really dangerous. Maybe we're in the same position with AI.
Right. That's great. So do you see the future as becoming so technological that they will lose the human factor, that they will lose the human touch? Because what we have found in the businesses that we work with is either they're very technological and have tried to do as little human touch as possible, or they're very highly human touch and try to use as the least amount of technology. So what do you see?
I think actually our business is quite a good example of how things might play out in the future. Let me just describe our business. So there are seven of us. We have a couple of people in Texas. We have one person in London. We have two people southeast of London. We have another person in Melbourne, Australia. And we have another person just outside London. So our team is spread around the world. And now for a small business, that gives you a sense, I think, of the opportunity that technology represents, because without technology, we wouldn't be able to operate like that. So we have a number of different platforms that we use to interact in different ways. And there's no rocket science here. WhatsApp is our water cooler app. Skype is our getting together to meet face-to-face app. We obviously email to transmit important information and communications. And we share business data in Dropbox. So, we're using those technologies to help us share information, to help us share our experiences, and to work together on a one-to-one basis. So I would actually see more of that as we go forward. I think lots of companies use technologies in similar ways, but I don't think too many are kind of using it in the way that we are. And there's nothing, there's no rocket science here. We're using existing technologies. We're not using brand new, shiny, just off the shelf technologies.
Right.
I think as we see millennials and Gen Z start to come into the workforce in the future, we're going to see another change, because expectations about how people work, not just the tools that they work with, will change as well as we go into the future. So increasingly, and lots of people are talking about this, aren't they? Increasingly remote working, increasingly the use of video and immersive technologies to help us create a face-to-face environment. Maybe working more in virtual worlds as well as working with augmented reality and so on. So there are lots of opportunities, lots of new ways for us to meet what I think is a fundamental basic human need, and that is for contact with another human being.
Right. Now,
whether some of these technologies in the future will actually replace that, whether we will end up marrying robots rather than real people,
That's good. You can manipulate them.
Well, you can never fight. That's right. You can, unless the AI gets so really creepy that it's able to actually operate on that kind of empathetic and emotional level. In which case, you're in trouble.
Yeah, and that you're in real trouble. Yeah, because then they can't turn the emotion off. Yeah.
Yeah. Then you'll be looking for the button, the off button. Where is the off button?
Yeah, that's right.
Where's the remote control?
Batteries out. But we totally understand, because that's how we run our business. We're not even in the same state, and we're constantly, and we use all of this technology. A lot of people have questioned, how on earth can you work together? And I'm like, we can spend probably a day together as well as not spend a day together due to technology. So technology, we use it when it's necessary. And there are times when everybody's off all of the technology because we're actually doing our jobs. So it brings us together. It separates us. But we can, rather than even get up and go down the hall to someone's office, we have all of this, all of this technology that we use. We use Dropbox. We use Evernote. We use WhatsApp. We use all of it. We use all of this so that we can actually enhance our business. Yeah. But yet we're also very, very aware of being high touch. And so with our customers, we take the time to pick up that phone and call them and talk to them and try to be as high touch as possible. So we've been successful in using both. So we're very technological. We use I think probably all of the latest technology. If one of us doesn't know it, one of us knows it. And then there we also are very, very, very high touch. So we take the time to visit our clients when necessary, talk to them. We're very customer friendly.
Yes. And I think it's interesting you differentiated there the kind of the relationship piece from maybe some of the other routine, I hesitate to call it number crunching, but you know what I mean? Some of this kind of other stuff that we all have to do within our businesses. But the important thing is, what about the relationship? And that's where I think the technology really plays a part in actually allowing us to go and do those other things, go and do those good relationship things. Maybe inside our bigger organizations, it will allow HR professionals to really demonstrate a degree of empathy, to really demonstrate that they understand mental stress and that they can help people within their organizations develop coping mechanisms, given the uncertainty and the complexity that we're seeing elsewhere in the work environment. So, these are the choices that I think we have as we go into the future, as we go through this transition phase. To really get underneath what it means for us to be human within the context of a highly digitized society. Because the technology is coming. We ain't going to stop that.
No.
Because at the same time you say, I want this personal contact, we also want all this technology to help make our lives easier. So we have to find a way for us to exist with technology.
Right. We need to coexist.
We do.
We need to coexist. I love it. Thank you so much. So my last question. The future, does it look positive or does it look bleak from where you're standing?
No, it doesn't look bleak from where I'm standing, because about, maybe it's blind faith, but I have the kind of the faith that in the end, enough of us are going to make the right kind of decisions to ensure that we do reach the point that we have a very human future. And I suppose one of the things that makes me say that is that the dystopian alternative is just rather too great to consider.
Okay, wonderful. Okay. Well, I want to thank you so much, Steve, for being here with us, for sharing with us your wealth of knowledge. I would say pick up all those books, because his books have been, these books are amazing. I don't have them all, but I have quite a few of them. I have like three of them. So I look forward to, you know, having you back and sharing a little bit more about, you know, not just augmented or artificial intelligence, but how it applies in business, because that at the end of the day, that's what business people want to know. How does it apply to them?
Yeah.
Correct?
Right. Right. Yep.
Okay. So, all right. I want to thank everyone for being here and tuning in to another one of our programs. So next week, we will have another futurist, and we look forward to seeing you next week. All right, guys. I'll see you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Foresight Strategy Show. You can hear host Dr. Nilda, co-host Rachel with feature guests every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Facebook Live or anytime on demand. Visit www.drnildaperez.com/show. For more information, sign up to our Foresight Strategies Insider newsletter, a $10 value for free, at www.drnildaperez.com/newsletter.